Hi, welcome to episode 7 of the Flowerpot Pen podcast, recorded in Toorang, Western Victoria, on land traditionally owned by the Kuai Wurrung and Gundjimara people. Today, I'll be chatting a little about some wintertime jobs in the garden, reviewing another go-to gardening book, and in botany bits, I'll be talking a little bit about why and how the leaves of deciduous trees change colour and drop off in autumn. Although I must say, the autumn leaf fall seems to be taking longer these days. I've got no evidence to back that up. I may even be making it up, but that's what it seems like. Anyway, on with episode 7. Winter is no longer coming, it's here, and with a vengeance. The ski fields in the Victorian Alps were able to open early with some good falls of snow. Down at this level, we don't often get snow, but sometimes it feels as though we should be having some snow cover. Apparently, back in the 80s, the nearest mountain, some would call it a hill, but it most definitely is a mountain and a volcano at that. The nearest mountain, Mount Newitt, had some snow on the very top of it. I'd like to see that one day, but I might not be that lucky. We've had some cold temperatures here, but a fair bit of rain too. According to farmers, we haven't had enough. One thing the rain does for me, though, is to cut down the hours I have that I'm able to work in the gardens, both mine and my clients' gardens. I don't mind a small shower or two if you can get under the trees or some other shelter, but continuous showers or even drizzle just makes gardening a cold, wet affair. I especially hate when you're wearing a rain jacket and the rain runs down your back onto your bum or the back of your legs. You know, it's even worse if it's enough to run down the back of your neck. Right, okay. June and July are traditionally rose pruning time. I think I might leave mine as late as possible this year, but if you feel like yours can be done now, go for it. The main things to think about are to have clean, sharp tools and make clean cuts that slope away from the newest buds and not into the centre of the plant. Some easy steps to follow when pruning a shrub-type rose are as follows. A. First of all, cut off all the dead parts and then see what you are left with. B. Cut out any parts growing in towards the centre of the plant. C. Go around the outside of the plant and cut all the stems back by at least two-thirds if you can. And finally, D. Make sure you leave the plant in a generalised, open-centred, round shape, traditionally known as a vase shape. Of course, you realise it never works that way so easily, and you often have to stop and think about what your next move will be. Just understand roses are extremely forgiving and they'll cope with whatever you do, mostly. With the climbing or trailing type rose, it's pretty much the same. Cut off the dead bits first, then go from there. One thing to understand about any of these climbing plants is that it will flower better on stems that are growing horizontally. Any long growths you cut that are coming off a leading cane when you're pruning them, or the main stem, should be cut back to about two buds out from the main stem. It's a bit hard to describe rose pruning verbally, so finding a good YouTube clip or a book showing you in detail is a good idea. I intend to do a series of rose pruning blog posts in the next couple of months when I decide to do my roses, so you could always hold off and check them out on theflowerpotpen.com when they come out. If you subscribe to my blog posts, they should automatically end up in your email inbox. As I said before, roses are quite forgiving plants, so if they're not pruned or not pruned very well, they shouldn't die from it, we hope. Okay, many other plants can be pruned now. Summer flowering shrubs and perennials can have their flowering stems cut back. Things like chrysanthemums can be cut right back down to the base of the plant where there should be some leafy growth. The sedum spectivale can be cut right back down, just the flowering stems. Once again, finding a YouTube clip or a book that shows you how to prune each particular type of plant or shrub is a good idea. I will push the point, though, that having clean, sharp tools are the most important thing when you are pruning anything. many diseases of plants, including bacterial, viral, and fungal diseases, can all be transferred between plants with contaminated secateurs and other tools. Wiping the cutting blades with a mix of methylated spirits between plants is a good habit to get into. I use 10 mils of methylated spirits into 1 litre of water. And as I'm going, I dip the secateurs or my loppers into it and wipe them down. Sharp blades are important too. This is so the cut has a smooth surface and edge that can heal really well. Plants with woody stems have the amazing ability to form new growth over any cuts and wounds. You often see on trees a type of woody callus growing around the edges of any large cuts where branches have been cut off, hopefully neatly cut off. Or even if they just fall off, this will happen too. When I was very young, I remember the oak trees growing at the edge of the playground at my primary school. They were very large and quite old for oak trees in New Zealand, and I imagine they were the homes of fairies, probably due to the little doors inside the rings that had grown around old cuts. Just between you and me, I still like to think they do live there. But anyway, back to reality. Anyway, that process has the technical acronym of CODIT, C-O-D-I-T, which stands for compartmentalisation of disease or damage in trees. What this means is the tree has the ability to section off that part of the plant, it has the ability to section off the part of itself that has some kind of infection or wound, such as a limb being removed. The same actually can happen in humans, but those consequences can be greater. This action by the tree stops pathogens getting into the tree's system. But if you're using clean, sharp tools, the risk is lessened. I love trees. They're amazing. Another job that can be done now is to lift and divide dahlia tubers. I've left mine in the ground over the last couple of years, which is okay to do here, but as the clumps get bigger, the flowers can get smaller. So what you'd need to do is wait until the green growth, the stems and the leaves, have died down, then cut it all off at the base. If you're going to lift up your tubers, just gently push a fork underneath the clump and prise it up slowly. It will generally come up in one big clump. The tubers, they'll all sort of be jumbled up, but if you gently pull on them, they'll break apart into their separate tubers. Now, you can either just put them back in the soil, and how you do that is you just make a hole, place them in there gently with a bit of the leftover stem at surface height, and backfill the soil. Any of the tubers that are left over, if you don't want to give them away to friends and family to spread the joy, you can put them in a cardboard box, cover them with newspaper, and put them in a cool, dry place until springtime. Once again, I'm hoping to do a blog post or video to go through the process, so keep an eye out for it. Anyway, on to my book review. A lot of people have this book, and it pops up in op shops a lot. It's the Reader's Digest Illustrated Guide to Gardening. Published by Reader's Digest, it has several editions. The earliest edition I'm aware of, I've somehow got two copies of this edition. It's from 1966 and is called Complete Book of the Garden, but it's pretty much the same thing. Has a lot of the same information, even a lot of similar illustrations. The edition of Illustrated Guide to Gardening I have is from 1976, and there are also updated editions printed in 1995 and 2000. I mean, there's probably more, but they're the only ones that I've sort of found. Anyway, whichever edition you have, it's chock-a-block full of great information about possibly everything to do with gardening in the home. The Amazon description states, no other gardening book is needed. While I don't agree with that, you can never really have enough gardening books. It comes pretty close to being one of the most informative. It's a pretty comprehensive source of info, from soil types to pruning instructions to caring for orchids. Latest editions are easily found online, and I've even found the 1966 edition for sale listed as a vintage book. So there you go. It's worth hunting out if you're after a definitive guide to gardening. Now for botany bits. We've all experienced the sight of red, gold, bronzy gold leaves blowing across the asphalt, landing in piles in the corners of yards and around the bases of bare-limbed trees. Autumn, or fall as it is called in some parts, is a magical time of cool weather, colourful leaves swirling around and the promise of colder days to come. It's my favourite time of the year in Victoria. The light is amazing and we get some of the brightest sunshine without getting stinking hot. Anyway, back to the leaves. Have you ever wondered how and why they change colour from greens to reds and oranges? It's quite a simple answer to that, really. What is happening is the green of chlorophyll in leaves is used to convert sunlight into energy to feed the tree or shrub while it's in its growing phase and its reproductive phase. Once those phases are done with, some trees and shrubs go into a dormant phase where leaves aren't required. Without going into too much detail, I'm not a botanist, I've just got a healthy interest. Without too much detail, the leaves stop making the green chlorophyll and the colours of the other chemical compounds that are actually always hidden, always present but are hidden, become more evident. The existing chlorophyll breaks down and is absorbed by the plant. These changes are prompted by changes in temperature and the length of the days, just with the different amount of light. And the plant realises it's time to rest, so it doesn't need to keep its leaves. Different species have different coloured autumn leaves, and this is because they have different organic compounds present called carotenoids, which have different pigments. Some of these are xanthophylls, which are yellow, and carotenes, which are orange. The red colours are formed by sugars trapped in the leaves, which create anthocyanins as the plants cut the leaves off from their stems. Different combinations of all these pigments form different colours. As a plant continues to shut down for winter, it forms a layer of cells at the end of the stem the leaf is on, and the leaf is free to continue its existence as leaf litter on the ground when it falls down. As I said before, I love trees. They're amazing. All this information comes off an article called The Science Behind Why Leaves Change Colour in Autumn, What Makes the Rainbow of Colours, by Elena Motivans, dated February 1st, 2021, and it can be found on zmescience.com. And I will put the link up for this on my website, theflowerpotpen.com, if you're interested in reading it in its entirety. Well, that's about it for this episode. Another shortish one. I'm finding at the moment I'm able to complete one each month, usually in the first week or the second week of each month. Following and subscribing the flowerpotpen.com will get you my blog posts in your email. subscribing to this podcast at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and Acast will get this scintillating and informative podcast sent to you as it comes out, and you won't have to hunt it out, so you don't miss out. Do you know anyone else that loves gardens and gardenings and plants in general? Put them onto this podcast so they don't miss out either. Thanks again to Les at the Commercial Hotel in Toulang for providing the space and equipment to do this, and to Jim Williams for his technical know-how. Check out Jim's music. You'll find details on his Facebook page. Thanks for listening.